Happy to call you back. Time to talk to another friend of the show, and we've got his picture up and running on the Friends of the Show gallery on the Jeff Berzicott page at 5AA.com.au. Links through to their own website as well. Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. How are you?
You doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah,
beautiful. Good. You're looking in fine form on the website.
Oh, that's good. I hope you like my picture.
Yes, no, glorious.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, I know you've been campaigning for nuclear power for a long time.
Yes, we have, yep.
And there's a... for the people who advocate against them, who campaign against them, there's a couple of issues, I suppose. One's the fear that they'll just blow up any given moment, the ticking time bomb sort of thing. And the, that sort of radioactive fallout doesn't respect borders or geography or so much. And the other thing is, what do you do with all the waste? Well, it seems that there's a lot of people are working on that, the waste issue. And as I mentioned before, there's a brand new type of nuclear reactor that eats other nuclear reactors' junk.
Well, there's a lot of different reactors that use up depleted uranium or other what they call fertile material and use it up to create power. The Indians, for example, well, if they're developing a new type of reactor using thorium as a fuel. Thorium, Australia has a huge. We have the world's largest reserves of thorium. Yeah, thorium is what's called a fertile nuclear fuel, which means it doesn't actually have a it's not fissile, it doesn't create nuclear reactions by itself. What you have to use is something like plutonium to get the process started. So what you can do is take plutonium from nuclear warheads and use it in these reactors to use the thorium, which doesn't create proliferable material for warheads, and actually burn up the plutonium. So that's one particular type of reactor. But there are other reactors around that use up other sorts of nuclear waste in the process, because the temperatures that they degenerate are so high.
Well, look, if it's so easy, I guess we always come down to if it makes so many sense on so many levels and seems to answer all these, the problems with nuclear power, why don't they do it?
Well, there's been, for the last 40 years, a push against nuclear power. Some could say the oil industry has a particular interest in making sure that nuclear power isn't developed. You also have various other interests that have deliberately run a very massive scare campaign on the development of nuclear power, saying, and particularly they use Chernobyl, for example. Like, I'm reading an article here that says, it's actually put out by the Australian Conservation Foundation, where it published in 1999 in their own magazine that 250,000 people have died so far as a result of the Chernobyl tragedy. That's when that old reactor blew up. It wasn't a nuclear reaction. It was actually a fault in the reactor that the operators were not made aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have the scare campaign of 250,000 people being killed, which was not true. And then Peter Garrett, the Minister for Insulation.
yes.
When he was the President of the Australian Conservation Foundation, he said there was 30,000 deaths attributed to the Chernobyl disaster.
Right.
You know how many people died from the Chernobyl disaster, Jeff?
Yeah, go on.
40. 40 as of 2005.
Close. It's a ballpark. 40 versus 250.
That's actually what happened. The 40 were caused by radiation, 3 due to mechanical accidents at the scene, and you had a lot of other people that were killed by sheer stress of trying to get out of the area due to the accident, as well as an estimated 50,000 abortions that people had, fearing that the radiation would affect their unborn children.
Oh God! There was some sort of nuclear cloud that floated over Europe, though, wasn't there?
What people don't understand is that the atmosphere is full of radiation all the time. You get more radiation sleeping next to someone than you would out of the actual natural environment, like in the air.
What? Hang on. You get more radiation from sleeping next to someone.
That's right. Because the whole of our universe is, in fact, filled with radiation. In fact, without radiation, we would die.
Right.
And what you have is, in some cases, you have this application of radiation in in some cases, by nuclear processes can actually heal. Or we use it in medicine to, you know, to look at, you know, dealing with cancers and so forth.
Well,
but increased levels of radiation can actually have a healing property. Now, that's a bit contrary to what you usually get with the scare campaigns, but this, when you start talking about the whole science of nuclear power and nuclear processes, it's something that's been suppressed mainly because of the radical green movement for so long and those sorts of scare reports that have come out like that, those ones from the ACF.
So I guess the, I mean, my first point is, wouldn't that be ironic if... that nuclear, the cloud that floated over Europe after Chernobyl actually had quite marvellous healing properties. People woke up the next day going, gee, I feel terrific. I guess the other thing is, why does the green movement jump up and down about nuclear power if they're barking up the wrong tree? Now, where are they getting the air from?
That's the funny part about it, is a lot of the, a number of the key guys that established the ACF in the beginning have now swung over and said, look, nuclear power is the actual solution to the world's problem of the degradation of the environment, because you can create cheap, abundant power which doesn't pollute. Now, the founder of the one of the founders of the ACF, one of those other groups, I'm just trying to find it if I can get his name for you, but he actually, there's a number of them that actually switch sides on this particular issue because it's actually true. If you look at the number of people, for example, just from another point of view, that are killed in coal mines, for example, you're talking thousands of people around the world that are killed, literally from working in coal mines or mining the, you know, in China and Russia and where they've got these underground mines.
Yep.
You have more people killed in coal mines than you have affected by nuclear radiation processes from nuclear power, and no one's been killed in a nuclear power station, right? So you have that aspect of it. One of the other interesting things when you look at nuclear power is you look at the risk factors, you know, and this particular figure's come from a guy by the name of Colin Keyes. Now, he's a retired nuclear physicist. He put out a series of little booklets. One of them is called Nuclear Energy Fallacies. I think people want it, they can Google it on the internet and see if they can find it.
Mm. I mean, this isn't an average Joe on the street. If he is a nuclear physicist, he's worth listening to.
He's not an average Joe on the street. He's someone who has had a long 25-year career in this. So he just didn't like the lies that went with nuclear power. So he wrote a series of little booklets. And some really amazing figures, like, you take your radiation exposure in any one particular day, right? Sleeping with your partner is 2 microserviets, and serviets is the measure that they use. Microserviets is the measure they use. Sleeping with your partner is 2.
Right.
Nuclear generation worldwide is less than 1. Jet travel, 25. The weapons test fallout worldwide, 15. TV viewing, 6, right?
Mm.
So if you look at the nuclear power generation worldwide, it contributes to less than 1 of your radiation exposure as we speak right now with everything that goes on.
So we're slowly toasting ourselves as we sit and watch TV every night.
Well, that's the highest exposure would be from radon gas inside your home. Now, radon is a radioactive gas in the atmosphere naturally. It emits 700 microserviets. Now, you can't do anything about radium gas, and it's been around ever since man's walked the face of the planet.
Mm.
It's just one of those, like I said, natural radioactive elements that exist in our environment, and there's a lot of them. Now, the other interesting thing, people get all freaked out. I wouldn't mind having a nuclear power station in my backyard, right? I'll say that. If anyone wants to rip out the clothesline and put a nuclear power station, I'll be very happy to do that.
All right, we got that on record.
I can get that on record. Because, you know, one of the freakouts is, oh, I know, they're such a danger. Well, there's a little table that Colin Key has published. He says that living, the loss of life expectancy, losses due to various risk factors, like in days. He says living near a nuclear power plant, 0.4 of a day. That's a risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
Cigarette smoking, 2,300 days. Working as a coal miner, 1,100 days. That's how many days you would lose off your life
right,
if you were if you were looking at taking up those particular activities.
And living next to a, what was it, 0.4 of a day?
4.
Right.
Right, and that's worked out, he's worked that out scientifically as a measure of the risk factors associated with living next to nuclear power. Hmm. So
you lose about 10 hours off your life by...
About 0.4 a day. About 10 hours, if that.
What if you wanted to do something in that 10 hours?
Well, it's not like losing 1,100, but, I mean, look, the advantages of nuclear power for Australia are unbelievable. Like, the South Africans are developing, there's a company over there that's developing what's called a pebble bed modular reactor. Now, these pebble bed is very important because the nuclear fuel, and they're designing it for thorium and for uranium, is encased in ceramics, which means that the fuel, the operating temperature of the fuel is much lower than the melting point of the ceramics. And you have these little ceramic balls in the bottom of the reactor, which create the heat. And they also have inert gas like helium circulating throughout the reactor, and you have heat exchangers that create the ability to create the power through the various heat exchange equipment they've got. Now, these modular reactors don't require huge amounts of water. They can be made about 300 megawatts, and they can be placed in the ground, encased in concrete if you want to, but they would run consistently and provide consistent power, no blackouts. They're controlled by the use of control rods. So that, if anything goes wrong with them, hypothetically, there's no way that they can just continue operating because, or explode, because they have a negative energy coefficient, which means they shut themselves down automatically.
Okay.
So you have that sort of reactor. Now you've got that they're being built in South Africa. You've got the Chinese are building these types of reactors. You also have the traditional, what we call fourth generation light water reactors, which are nothing like people would think. In terms of Chernobyl. When we talk about nuclear power, people say Chernobyl. Well, forget Chernobyl. Those are old things to start with. The mistakes that were made there was that the operators were not advised of potential faults or problems with that power station.
With the going back on that that booklet where it says the risk factors in terms of days off your life, 0.4 by getting out of bed, the... Is there? What about getting on a plane? Is that listed on the list?
Oh, I'll let you. No, hang on a sec.
Because I just wonder.
Motor vehicle accidents is 180 days.
Right.
Airplane crashes, one.
Oh, one day.
One day.
Oh, okay. Well, it's bigger than that's bigger than living next to a nuclear power plant.
That's right.
But and I just think, I mean, it is interesting that Chernobyl is the poster child for what can go wrong, and yet people. Far more people die every year of, getting on a plane, yet we keep doing that.
Yeah, well, the other one is Three Mile Island, right?
Where that's right.
They had another accident. But that was, again, all blown out of proportion. There was a sniff of radioactive gas escaped from that, but generally the whole reactor was contained within the containment areas. And these reactors are built with containment areas around them and multiple levels of security. So the radioactive material can't get released.
Okay. Now, Craig, we'll have to leave it there. So if people want to find out more, though?
Well, jump on the website, www.cecaust.com.au.
Mm. And what's the name of this guy with the little booklets?
It's Colin Keyes. It's spelt... it's Colin, as in C-O-L-I-N, and it's K-E-A-Y.
Okay, right.
Now, he has made these books generally available to the public free of charge because he no longer publishes them. So if people look up his name, they should be able to find them. And it's very well worth reading them because he identifies his sources with every single quote. And...
not just wild, things he's plucked out of the air sort of thing.
Well, if people can't find them, Jeff, they can just jump on our website and, or send us an email, which is on the website, and I can try and find them and,
terrific.
Send it out to them.
All right, go from there. Hey, Craig, good to catch up again. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Have a good one. There's Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Back after.